moments for today. Take a question of the book of the non-Christian returns on the states of Saudi Arabia
and
Borderline returns on the states of Saudi Arabia. The deed is closed. Next time. Reading from the 13th chapter of the 10th canto, which is the final chapter that Srila Prabhupada translated. In the 13th chapter, with Brahma, this is very much towards the end of Krishna's Balalila, where what's dominant in the early part of the 10th canto is Krishna's baby childhood pastimes. And the person whose love is demonstrated at that time is the parents, especially Mother Yashoda, Nanda Baba, and all the other senior members of residents of Braja. And then when the boys get a little bit older, Krishna and Balaram, then it moves to the childhood pastimes and their play. So this happens just at the end of the 11th chapter, just at the very end of, after the Damodar Lila, and then the Jamalajun chiefs come down, and then in the 12th chapter, practically speaking, Krishna begins to herd the calves. He wants to herd the cows, but he's so little, and the cows are so big. So, but yet he's unstoppable because he's restless. He's independent. He does as he likes. So they decided, Nanda Maharaj decided to allow Krishna and the young boys to take out the calves. And Krishna did that in such an expert way. So at the end of that, This Leela goes on, the calf herding Leela goes on to the end of the 14th chapter, then in the 15th chapter, this is called, it's about Dhanukasura, but it's Krishna enters the Vrindavan forest for the first time. So in that chapter, Krishna begins his cowherd pastimes when he takes out the cows with his friends. And in that chapter is the first glimpse of his dealings with the young. Hoping that's right at the end of the 15th chapter. So here, this is moving towards, because Krishna has taken out all the calves, and then Brahma has stolen away the calves and the boys. And much to Brahma's surprise, when he came back after 1 year, which was one moment of his time, the very boys and calves that he had stolen away were still there, each exactly in the same mood, each having the same name, each boy, each calf having the same bodily features. So Brahma could not understand how this was possible, because he took the boys and calves away and hid them. And he wanted to see how Krishna would react to that. So when he came back, much to his surprise, he saw that Krishna was playing with the exact same calves and boys as he was before Brahma had taken them away. And Brahma instead of seeing Krishna's bewilderment, Brahma himself became bewildered because of his attempt. And in his own bewilderment, he couldn't tell if these were the real boys or the duplicate boys, and he became so confused. And then Krishna did something that in one sense took away Brahma's confusion, but in another sense, he just increased, he showed Brahma, he gave Brahma a glimpse of reality, which was so different from his ability to conceive reality, Brahma's ability to conceive reality. So in one sense, that he tried to delve into the unlimited potencies of the Supreme Lord, he would become even more confused, which is what happens to the jnanis, or the material scientists. The deeper they try to penetrate into the understanding of the Supreme Lord by their own power, or the understanding of absolute reality by their own power, they actually become more and more ignorant, in the sense that for every one thing they think they find out, it brings up another 10 or 12 or 15 other questions. So the percentage of what they don't know has just increased, what they don't understand. So, but Brahma didn't take that step and try to penetrate deeply into the potencies of Krishna. What he did was, when Krishna took his next step, what he did was just become filled with awe and reverence. And he saw that Krishna's power was unlimited. He didn't see that Krishna's power was unlimited in the sense that he understood the extent of Krishna's power, but he saw that Krishna's power was unlimited in the sense that he could not, with his great, great intelligence, he could not penetrate or understand anything about the depth or the heights of Krishna's potencies and powers. So he backed away from his intellectually trying to understand, and he just became filled with reverence. So what we're hearing now is just the very end of what he saw after seeing the same boys and calves. Then Krishna showed, or gave Brahma a glimpse of the truth, that he himself was those boys and calves, that he himself had expanded into the boys and calves. And how did Krishna do that? How did Krishna show that to Brahma? He did is he showed those very same boys and calves, they began to manifest, their forms shifted into the forms of Vishnu. And each of the forms of Vishnu, the Bhagavatam described, had the mark of Shivatsa on the chest, on the right side of the chest, or whitish hair curling towards the right. And this indicated that these forms of the Lord were not like Vishnu Dutas. They were not Krishna's associates, because the Srivata mark, the mark of the goddess of fortune, is only possessed by the Lord himself, because goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, she is Chanchal for everyone else. She's always shifting from one, moving from one to the next, because she cannot find anyone qualified enough to bestow full good fortune upon. But then when she sees Lord Narayan, then she said, oh, he's the one who's qualified. It's so interesting. We all naturally want good fortune continuously. But whether we're qualified or not to have good fortune continuously is a question that we don't ask about ourselves. Because we're not qualified, and practically, depending on how qualified we are, how pious we are, we could say, good fortune comes to us proportionately, and how impious we are, bad fortune comes to us. So if we get some good fortune, that is due to our piety. And if we get some bad fortune, it is due to our impiety. It is our fate due to our karma. So if we want good fortune to come to us, then we have to increase our piety, and that's the Vedic path. Even Bali Maharaj understood this. By the blessings of his spiritual master. Who is Bali Maharaj's spiritual master? Sri Sukracharya's blessings. He became so powerful that as soon as Indra committed a fault, he was able to take over the heavenly planets. Because to do anything in this world takes piety and power. Takes piety and power. So, and to have misfortune occur to us takes impiety, and that takes away our power. So he had to wait for Indra to do something impious. And that brought Indra's bad fortune, which was an opportunity for Bali Maharaj to get his good fortune. So that's the nature of the material world. We're always getting this combination. When we're crying because of our bad fortune, someone else is laughing because of their good fortune. And we're thinking, why is he laughing? Doesn't he see how little I'm miserable? And he's laughing because you are miserable, because he gets an opportunity. This is the material world. So, but Bali Maharaj, as soon as he attained by the mercy of Sukracharya and the piety he had performed, as soon as he attained the heavenly planets, he immediately understood that I may have attained this, but I don't have the piety to maintain it. So what did he do? Does anyone know? One after the next, 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 and so on. So he would increase his piety so he would be able to maintain his position. Very interesting. Because now, because if you gain something on the material level due to your piety, but don't have the piety to maintain it, always so much anxiety. Always in continuous anxiety, because one sees threats everywhere, because one knows that one doesn't really deserve to be in this high position. Are you going to take rest now, Anika? Little. So it's interesting how Indra Dev, or the mother of Indra, was so upset. They had to make a plan. She wanted to make a plan to get Bali Maharaj out and to get her son back in. So they had to use the same reverse. In reverse, they had to get Bali Maharaj to make a mistake and get cursed. So when Sukracharya cursed them. But because, it's so interesting, but even though he suffered from his impiety, he got cursed by his spiritual master because it was due to his surrender to Krishna, then the most wonderful thing came from it. So that indicates that whether we have piety or impiety, if we take shelter of Krishna, if we have good karma or bad karma, if the times are good or the times are bad on the material level, if we can somehow or another take shelter of Krishna, then our good fortune really begins. That is really the definition of good fortune. Because the piety and impiety, auspiciousness and inauspiciousness, it's actually, as Prabhupada has stated many times, there is nothing auspicious in the material world. It is all inauspicious. Why? Because of Rama Bhuvana Loka Puna Avitu Arjuna, that from the topmost position to the lowest position is all places of misery where death takes place. It is just the converse of what you're thinking in the material world, that we're going to be successful in the material world. It's not possible to be successful in the material world. It's not possible to be healthy in the material world. but it's possible to be successful on the spiritual platform. So to help convince us of this point and to purify our hearts, we've been hearing how Brahma reacted when he was reacting, what he saw when he saw these coward boys turn into Vishnus, and he got a glimpse of the potency, a glimpse, because he could not understand the potency of the Lord, because it's unlimited. No one can understand it. No one can capture it in his finite, with finite intelligence. So he got a glimpse of Krishna's potency, and that little glimpse was sufficient to fill him with so much awe and veneration, and the words that come out of his mouth in the 14th chapter reveal how astounded he was by what he saw. But here we're just hearing what he saw. He saw things that those who are jnanis, and who are studying Upanishads, the Jnanakanda section of the Vedic literatures, they have no approach to the Supreme Person. They cannot approach him by their own power or by the power of their intelligence, because Krishna explains, bhakti among Nabhidana. It can only be approached by bhakti, by devotion, because when we're pushing at the absolute, we're pushing to understand the absolute truth by our own power. He's so much beyond our power. But by bhakti, he kindly reveals himself by his grace. When Krishna shows us who he is, and he reciprocates with our serving mood, with the bhakti, then we can understand something about him. So a very, very different consciousness has to awaken in our heart. In the material world, everyone wants to do. What are we going to do to get this? And what are we going to do to get that? And it's all about me. And if I want it enough, and I can do anything. That's what we've heard. This is how the children in the topmost schools are trained. You can do anything. You can be anything. You have to desire and want, and you can achieve. You can go to the moon and become loony. That's where the word comes from, loony, lunar. So this is how people are taught, but this is, but it's good for material success. If there's such a thing as material success. But it's not good for spiritual life. Spiritual life, it works on a different principle. It works on the principle of, I don't have the capacity. Only if Krishna gives some blessing can anything be had. So let me act in such a way that is pleasing to Krishna. Very different mood. So, in an in-between stage where we don't have that mood, which is called bhakti, bhakti to please Krishna, being satisfied with whatever remnants Krishna throws us, and thinking we don't deserve that, rather than that mood. So, in the beginning we take the other mood into bhakti, but Krishna is so kind that we achieve some little success by our strong endeavors in Krishna giving us success. And then at some time, I don't know how to put it very graphically, he will always pull the carpet out from under us. You know what that means? You know what that expression means? Have you heard that before? Pull the carpet out from under you. You know that expression? Yes. It means like this, if you're standing like, yeah, this will say, this is a little carpet over here. You're standing on it, thinking, yes, everything is wonderful. And suddenly someone comes up and pulls it out from under you. And what happens?
Fall down.
on your nose or head or
face.
So that's Krishna. It's kindly trying to change our mood from kartaham, iti manyate, I am the one doing everything, to I am just simply a servant of the Supreme Personalities of Godhead self. So Brahma has just seen something very wonderful, and that he's seen something wonderful, these Vishnu forms that the impersonals cannot see, who are studying the Upanishads. So we read some of Prabhupada's purport, and now we'll start where he begins, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is going to give some quotes from Shastra, saying that although the Lord is unknowable, still he has a form. And then he's going to say some other interesting things, all from different shastras. So listen carefully. To establish that Brahman indeed has transcendental form, through the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives various quotations from the shastras. In the Svetasvatara Upanishad, the Supreme is described as Adityavanam Tamasa Parastad. He whose self-manifested form is luminous like the sun and transcendental to the darkness of ignorance. He has a form, but he folds it like the sun, and it has nothing to do with the forms of this world. It is transcendental to ignorance. So that was one quotation. And another one. Ananda matram ajaram puranam ekam santam bahuda drishyamanam. The Supreme is blissful. So all these quotations indicate that indeed he does have form, even though he's unlimited and has no boundaries, still he has a form, a transcendental form. The Supreme is blissful, with no tinge of unhappiness. Although he is the oldest, he never ages. And although one, he is experienced in different forms. What do you remember from that one? Excuse me? The lady in the back was knitting?
Although he is one, he is experienced in different forms.
Yes, so that means he can be one, or none different from... There's only one Supreme Lord, but still he has different forms. He's experienced. He reciprocates with the devotion of the devotees. He reveals himself to the devotee just as the devotee wishes to see him. What was the first part of it? Does anyone remember? I'll read it again. The first part is very interesting. Just think of what it means. You ready? The Supreme is blissful, with no tinge of unhappiness. Although he is the oldest, he never ages. And although one, he is experienced in many different forms. So although he's the oldest, he never ages. So think of what that means. He's the oldest, but he never gets older. That means he's always been the oldest. Now, if he's the oldest, now who's the oldest person here? Mataji in the back, it's not me. How old are you?
I'm the same year as you. You're on the beginning of the year, 47, and I'm the end of 47.
You've avoided my question. How old are you?
66.
Okay, so you're not even 67 yet.
No.
Oh. But Mataji is older than both of us.
No, she's not.
Yes, she is. Not that Mataji.
Oh, yes.
But we'll make this into a scientific question. Are you aging? I mean, your body?
Body, yeah.
Yeah. But Krishna is the oldest, but he never ages because he has a transcendental body. Now, we won't ask you this kind of a question, but if you could be the oldest and not aging, now, if you had a choice, where would you stop aging? Yeah, I'm not sure I'd stop at 16, though. It's pretty rough if you're eternally 16 years old in this world. But in the spiritual world, well, that's what Krishna does. His eternally blissful body stops aging at 16. What an incredible concept. Because when you see the Bible tracts, there's the little pamphlets and things like that. Sometimes they'll have a picture of an old man with a long beard, but not really much of a face. But he has a long beard. So how old does he look?
80, 90.
But he's much older than us, actually. He's eternal. So just imagine how long his beard must be. Every year it grows an inch or two. But since they don't want to depict that, they have him stop at 90. Or 85. But if he's not, if he's going to stop at 85, if he has the freedom to stop, better to stop when he's 16 or 17 or 14 or 13 or something like that. That age of where Krishna stops aging is a perfect age because when you get older than that, you have to start taking responsibilities in life and you're not blissful anymore. But 16 or so, you're intelligent, you're awake, you're healthy, and you take no responsibility. So Krishna just says, okay, this is a great age, I'll stop. I'll just have a good time and enjoy myself in the flower of youth. And Krishna just stays that way, Navayovanam. And everyone in Braja is like that. Eternally. He's the oldest because aham eva sam eva grave. He alone was there before the creation. So if he was there before the creation, he's older than anyone who was created. So he's older than anyone that's created. That means he's the oldest, but he doesn't look the oldest because he never ages, because he has a transcendental body, not a material body. So although he's the oldest, he never ages. He's blissful. With no tinge, not the slightest bit of anxiety or unhappiness. We can't even imagine. But we can. What's the cause of all the anxieties and unhappinesses? It's the crazy minds, material minds. Krishna has no crazy material mind. And he has no aging body. He has no one competing with him. He's unlimitedly wealthy, unlimitedly beautiful, and everyone loves him. He's served by countless Lakshmis, some Brahma Sevimanam. He's served by countless goddesses of fortune. Because he's so qualified. So therefore, always blissful, and his body is composed of ecstasy. He moves like a stream of bliss. Next quotation. Sarve nitya shashvatacha dehas tasya paratmanaha. All the forms of that Supreme Person are eternal from the Maha Varaha Parana. So the point again is that although he's unlimited, he's still a person with a form. The Supreme Person has a form with hands and legs and other personal features, but his hands and legs are not material. So is it possible for us who have only seen material hands and legs to conceive of what spiritual hands and legs are like? Well, all we could say, practically speaking, is that he has no material hands and legs, but yet he has hands and legs. So what is the nature of those hands and legs that are composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge? They are so wonderful. They're unlimited. Unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly powerful, unlimitedly potent. So this is not understandable to anyone but devotees, those who have devotion, because by their devotion, Krishna reveals himself to them. Bhaktas know that the form of Krishna, or Brahman, is not at all material. Rather, Brahman has a transcendental form. And when one is a... This is such an amazing description. So he has a transcendental form. Please listen to this. And when one is absorbed in it, being fully developed in bhakti, one can understand him. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilachanina. Okay, what did that... What did I just read? The Prabhupada said.
One is absorbed in him.
That's the first point. There was another one too.
Transcendental form.
Yeah, but he has a form, and one is absorbed in him. That doesn't mean that, water gets absorbed into cotton. Not absorbed in that sense. But absorbed means thinking of him, consciousness absorbed. So when one is absorbed in him, and what's the second point?
I'll read it.
Because it's important. It's interesting. Brahman has a transcendental form. Okay, so the first point. And when one is absorbed in it, in that form, one is thinking of that form continuously. Being fully developed in bhakti. So what does it mean to be fully developed in bhakti? What is the full development of bhakti?
Nirvilasita, actually.
Yes.
Nothing else but...
Right, but what's when you have that and you're fully absorbed, what is that called? So, but this is... But Anyam Vilasa Pisanyam, that's actually what this Prabhupada is describing here. The full absorption, but with bhakti, because Kamsa was fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, but there was no bhakti. It was pratikulena. Pratikul. He was against Krishna. Envy, with envy. With anger, fear, rather. So, this is the process, as Prabhu quoted, Anyam Vilasa Pisanyam, Yana Kamala Vita. That if one is absorbed in thoughts of the form of Krishna and fully absorbed, developed in bhakti, when it's developed and one loves Krishna, one can understand him. That is the process. Premanjana Charita Bhakti. The Mayavadis, however, cannot understand the transcendental form because, for they think it is material. Do you know that's what the Mayavadis think? They think that Brahman, when he comes to the material world, is covered by the mode of ignorance, or passion. He becomes a jiva. When Brahman is covered by the modes of passion, ignorance, he becomes a jiva. And when Brahman is covered by sattva-gun, the mode of goodness, he becomes Ishvara. And that is called an incarnation. This is the Mayavada philosophy. So they're saying that Brahman, covered by the material mode of goodness, is the Lord's incarnation, who's under the modes of nature. So when you serve him, you're serving in the modes of material nature, exactly the opposite of the Vaishnava philosophy. Mm-hmm. So the Mayavadis, thinking that the Lord's form is material, they cannot understand his transcendental form, because they think it's material. They don't see it as such eternity, bliss, and knowledge. They see it as Sattva-gun, the mode of goodness. And it is, they see the worship of the Lord's form as a step. You step on the Lord's form to climb the wall of illusion and then become Brahman. What do you think of that plan? Become, you step on the Lord's form with your feet and climb, use it as a ladder to climb over the wall of Maya to get to the other side where you become the Supreme. So therefore Mayavadis are offenders, because they're worshipping the Lord on one level, but it is just using him to get what they want. So that's not bhakti when you're doing business with someone and you're being very nice to the person you're doing business with, but it's only to get what you want from the business, to make money. So that's not a real relationship. They call that a business friendship. And as soon as there's no business, there's no friendship. Therefore, when Lord Nisringadev said to Prahlad that you please accept a benediction, you please accept, so I'll give you what you want, please take something. Prahlad said, I'm not a banya, I am not a merchant. I'm not really serving you because I want something from you. I'm serving you because you're my master and I'm your servant. This is who I am. I'm your servant. I'm not serving to get something. I'm serving because I'm your servant. Just like the wheel of the car turns because it's a wheel. It's not turning because to become something else. When the master is pleased with me, then he'll make me into a gearbox or something. Continuing Pope's words. Transcendental forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his person, transcendental forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his person are so great that the impersonal followers of the Upanishads cannot reach the platform of knowledge to understand them, because they are limited by their own intelligence, because that's the vehicle that they climb upon to move to the Supreme Lord. Their intelligence, and no matter how great their intelligence is insufficient, because he's unlimited, inconceivably, unlimitedly powerful and beautiful, etc. And the finite mind cannot fathom, understand this. Particularly, the transcendental forms of the Lord are beyond the reach of the impersonalists, who can only understand through the studies of the Upanishads that the Absolute Truth is not matter, and that the Absolute Truth is not materially restricted by limited potency. In other words, the Absolute Truth cannot be contained within the mind that has a capacity, the intelligence that has only a limited capacity. No matter how intelligent one is in this world, the capacity is limited with time and space. And Krishna is beyond time and is beyond space. We just heard how these things, these energies are worshipping him. You worship something, someone superior to you. You want his potencies. And the potent always possesses more than the potency. The potency cannot overpower the potent. So you say that Krishna's energy of Maya cannot put him into illusion. The potent can, potency cannot overpower the potent. So the impersonalists use their own energy, their own intelligence to find out the Lord, to discover His limits. But their intelligence is just one of the energies of the Lord. What's the verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Pumir, Apol, Ayu, Kamanu, Buddha, Evacha. So Buddhi is just an energy of Krishna, an inferior energy. So how could an inferior energy understand its source? You could conceive of it, capture it within its grasp. Can it? So, particularly the transcendental forms of the Lord are beyond the reach of the impersonalists who can only understand through the study of the Upanishads that the absolute truth is not matter and that the absolute truth is not materially restricted by limited potency. That's all they can understand. It's great Brahman, the greatest. Now Prabhupada's going to say something interesting. Who in a few words can sum up what I've just read? I'll read it again.
Okay.
The transcendental forms of the Lord are beyond the reach of the impersonalists. Got it? Who can only understand through the study of the Upanishads, now we're going to hear what they can understand, that the absolute truth is not matter, and that the absolute truth is not materially restricted by limited potency or power. So the absolute truth is unlimited. That's all they can understand, and that the absolute truth, through studying the Upanishads, the absolute truth is not material and is not limited, so it's all negative. Well, Prabhupada's going to change something here. Yet, although Krishna cannot be seen through the Upanishads, in some places it says that Krishna can in fact be known in this way. So some Upanishadic verses say that you can't know Krishna through the Upanishads, or rather he has forms, but other verses say that you can know Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth of the Upanishad. So these two opposing views can be brought together with some extra knowledge. Just like if we have, you have an iPhone, I presume, yes?
Samsung.
Huh?
Samsung,
but at least it's a smartphone.
Yeah.
Okay. So someone might say that it's a phone. And someone might say, no, it's an MP3 player. And someone might say, no, it's an MP4 player. And someone might say, it's a weather foreteller. It tells what the weather's going to be. And someone might say that it tells you, what else?
Alarm clock.
Alarm clock. And no, it's an alarm clock. No, it's a weather forecast. And no, it's an MP4 player. No, it's an MP3 player. No, it's a phone. No, it's a timer.
Camera.
It's a camera. And they're fighting. But actually, if you have the concept that unites them all, it's a Samsung smartphone, then you can understand, oh yes, that reconciles all these opposing viewpoints. So with some extra knowledge, we can reconcile this viewpoint that the impersonalists cannot, the jnanis cannot understand the absolute truth through the fully in its personal form through the Upanishads. But yet, some of the Upanishadic verses say, Upanishadad Purusham, he is known by the Upanishads. The Purusha is known by the Upanishads. So Prabhupada's going to explain that here. These are all coming from commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti. This means that when one is purified, and here is the major reconciliation, This means that when one is purified by Vedic knowledge, one is then allowed to enter into the devotional understanding. Mad bhakti labhate param. What verse is that from?
1854 or something. Mad bhakti. Amgurta prasana sachatina kamsati.
That one attains this in the verse before bhakti yogi. So when you perform bhakti sadhana, you go above the modes and attainments. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. And Brahma Nohi Pratisham. Krishna says, I am the basis of that Brahma. So this means that one is purified by Vedic knowledge. The purpose of Vedic knowledge is to purify. And then, when one is purified, one is allowed to enter into the devotional understanding. Mad bhakti bhavate. Tasya dadana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya prasyanti atmani chakmanam bhaktya sutta grihitaya. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti, from the Bhagavatam, the second chapter of the first canto. The word Shruta Kritaya refers to Vedanta knowledge, not sentimentality. Shruta Grihita is sound knowledge. Lord Vishnu, Brahma thus realized, is the reservoir, the source of all truth, knowledge, and bliss. He is the combination of these three transcendental features, and he is the object of worship for the followers of the Upanishads. Brahma realized that all the different forms of cows, boys, and calves transformed into Vishnu forms were not transformed by mysticism of the type that a yogi or demigod can display by specific powers invested in him. The cows, calves, and boys transformed into Vishnumurtis or Vishnu forms. They were not displays of Vishnu Maya or Vishnu energy, but they were Vishnu himself. The respective qualifications of Vishnu and Vishnu Maya are just like those of fire and heat. So there's a difference between those things produced from Vishnu and the Lord himself. There's a difference. And it's being compared to the difference between fire and heat. In heat, there is the qualification of fire, namely warmth, and yet heat is not fire. So some of the qualities of fire are in heat, but it is not exactly the same as fire. So those things produced from Vishnu have some of the characteristics of the Lord, but they are not the Lord. But they are not different from him, but they are not exactly the same as him. So this is Mahaprabhu's prophecy. The manifestations of the Vishnu forms of the boys, cows, and calves was not like the heat, but rather they were like the fire. They were all actually Vishnu. Factually, the qualification of Vishnu is full truth, full knowledge, and full bliss. Another example may be given with material objects, which may be reflected in many, many forms. For example, the sun is reflected in many water pots, but the reflections of the sun in many pots are not actually the sun. You can try this yourself. You can take 1,000 pots and put them outside and fill them all with water. Or you can wait till Sunday when it's going to rain and bring the empty pots, and then by Sunday evening or Monday they will be filled with water. And then when the sun comes out, you will see the sun in each and every one of those pots. But the sun that you will see is not actually the sun itself. It doesn't have the potency of the sun, because there is no actual heat and light from the sun in the pot, although it appears as the sun. But each and every one of the forms of Krishna, the Krishna sun, was fully Vishnu. They had all. So how is that possible? There were unlimited coming from Krishna, there were unlimitedly, there were unlimited Vishnus, and each one of those Vishnus had unlimited power. Think about that. From the unlimited, this is, gives a glimpse of Krishna's potency. That from him came unlimited Vishnus, and each one of those Vishnus had unlimited power. You can't do that. So when Brahma got a glimpse, and this was nothing, says Krishna, he did this before having lunch. He didn't get any weaker by giving out unlimited Vishnu forms. So this is inconceivable. This, when we're dealing with Krishna, we're dealing with the inconceivable, his potency. His potency is inconceivable. Achintya Shakti, without Achintya Shakti, inconceivable potency, there's no meaning to being the Supreme Lord. Now, then there's one short paragraph left, and I'll read that very short, just maybe one, two sentences. But I read this at the beginning, too. So we should, Prabhupada says, after discussing all this, he says, we should discuss Srimad Bhagavatam daily, as much as possible. And then everything will be clarified. For Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedic literature, Nigama Kalpatru Galitam Phalam. It was written by Vyasadeva, Mahamuni Krite, when he was self-realized. Thus, the more we read Srimad Bhagavatam, the more its knowledge becomes clear. Each and every verse is transcendental. It is not of the material world. So, Prabhupada concludes this very important purport, which discusses that the absolute truth, Krishna, has a form, even though he's unlimited. He concludes that by saying everything will become clear to us if we read Srimad Bhagavatam, Nityam Bhagavata Seva. Nityam means eternally, but also means regularly or daily, as much as possible. Why should we do it as much as possible? Because we want our consciousness to become absorbed in the Supreme Person. And then this is the only way to keep Maya away, and to keep the light of Krishna alive in our consciousness. Otherwise Maya has its way of getting inside. Have you noticed that? Okay, thank you. We'll stop here. Any questions or comments? What do you think, Punya? What do you think? What do you remember?
Nothing.
Okay, everyone, everyone try to remember something. What we spoke about.
Krishna is unlimited, his powers are unlimited. There's no start, no end. Is unconceivable. He is ever youthful, 16 years old. He is the oldest, but still is always young.
He never ages.
And he can only be understood through bhakti, not through jnana.
More.
Just through the past times which we discussed. Lord Brahma, how he got bewildered. At the time, for his one moment, and he came back and he saw Lord Shri Krishna taking forms of all the gopas and the cowherd boys and cows, and he couldn't tell which ones were real and which ones were not. And then when he manifested his Vishnu form, Lord Brahma, it bewildered him that it is Lord Vishnu's actual form was there.
And it was unlimited.
Unlimited.
And everyone was worshipping him. Thank you. Anyone remember anything else? Yes.
That he's one, but he's in many forms?
Yes, he has many forms. But he's still one. What does that mean?
He can expand himself unlimitedly, but he's still the one. husband?
Yes.
And the example we get in the thoughts, Krishna is the sun, and he can be seen with the number of thoughts. But the sun is there, but the sun is still there.
Mm. But that wasn't the example. Mm.
Smartphone.
Yeah, that's the concept that unites it. Because see, that example is to prove just the opposite. Mm. That's Vishnu Maya, the energy of Vishnu. Mm. And the energy of Vishnu doesn't have the same potency as Vishnu. Mm. But Vishnu himself, all those forms weren't his energy, Krishna's energy, but they were him. Now that makes it inconceivable. And yet, there's Krishna sitting there, still standing there with the food in his hand. He said, why are you praising me? I'm just a cowherd boy.
Sorry, I was talking about the jivas when I was talking about the gods.
Yeah. So he's still one, but inconceivable, unlimited, innately powerful persons can expand from him, and who are none different from him, and he doesn't lose any potency, and yet he's still the original. So that's inconceivable Shakti of Krishna. And there's nothing different from him. And there he is, playing in the cowherd fields of Raja. So that is inconceivable, yes? When you were young, did you ever see an Amrita Chitra Katha comic book?
I can't remember, maybe.
Maybe not. It's good that you didn't.
You can just clarify one thing, please. You know, like how you said about the Samsung phone? That is for, obviously for them, they can only get to a certain extent. And like as you were saying, the Vedas said that you can understand him through Vedas, but you can only understand to a certain extent. You can
through the study of the Vedas, but through bhakti.
Bhakti, you can understand him completely.
By his mercy.
By his mercy.
Mm.
So that's the unifying concept that reconciles. You can't understand him through the Upanishads. That you can. That if you purify yourself and then have bhakti, then you can understand him. That was the analogy of the form.
And that means
it reconciles. Mm-hmm. You can't and you can understand him through the Upanishads.
And that means that, like you were saying, there's so many teachers, that means you can understand both his material and spiritual energy.
You can understand him. That's not specific what I meant, but that's true. You can understand his material energy, his spirit. He has unlimited energies, and generally they're divided into three. But he has unlimited energies. They were all worshipping him. You understand? And there, there's the Upanishadic verse, or the Vedic verse that says, if you know Krishna, you understand everything. Because you see everything in its true relationship. And materialistic people may study, they can maybe make this recorder, but they don't actually even understand it because they're just manipulating it, but they don't understand its actual relationship with reality, the absolute truth, or the components. Did that sort of answer what you asked? Any other questions? Comments? Yes.
For the impersonalists, how is it presented to them that they cannot conceive the idea of Krishna being personal?
Well, they have a different understanding, as we said, of who Krishna is. They have a different philosophy.
So therefore, what's that based on? Is it how do they derive to that conclusion? Is
Vedanta, the Sarirak Bhasya of Sripad Sankaracharya. which is, and, yeah, which accepts the Vedas but twists the meaning of the Vedas.
Is that so, their actual philosophy of the Sarana?
That's part of it. Yeah.
So there's really no point in trying to convince them otherwise, because their whole mindset is based on a completely different.
Yes, and they'll not the same shastra, but a different understanding of it. So they'll say, this is good for children. It's okay. You believe that you do bhakti. That's when you. But when you become qualified later. Okay. That's what Mahaprabhu went to Benares. That's what the Prakasananda told him. He was saying, why are you singing and dancing with a bunch of sentimentalists? You should study Vedanta. That is the dharma of a sannyasi. You should be studying Vedanta. This is what this. Just sit and listen to Vedanta and meditate on Vedanta, and then you'll understand everything. So they have a different perspective on the same. That always happens. That one person sees a flower and he sees it. If you're a scientist, you see it. A botanist, you see it in one way. If you're a flower seller, you see it in another way. If you're a someone in love, you see it in another way. If you're an artist, you see it. If you're a bug, you see it in another way. So it's not recommended unless you are very, very, very deep and very, very powerful. Best to leave them. But they try to convince them. Mahaprabhu is very strict on the point of not listening to the philosophy, because it can turn your mind upside down. Mm-hmm.
Can you stay beyond that?
Turn you upside down. But not the, but the kirtans are different. We stay in the bubble of kirtan, and we're always protected.
Mm-hmm.
The Bhagavatam would stay within it, and in the association of the devotees. When Mahaprabhu was one of his devotees, Bhagavan Acharya, he was very close to Mahaprabhu, but he was very simple-hearted. And I think his brother came from Benares, and was staying with him, and he was lecturing on. He was an impersonalist, and he was lecturing on some impersonalist book, famous impersonalist book. And Bhagavan Acharya was listening to the lectures, was attending the lectures, and Mahaprabhu was so upset with him. So, don't you understand? He's an impersonalist. And then when Mahaprabhu was strict with him, he sent him away to go home. Didn't want to displease Mahaprabhu. This is bhakti. Any other questions?
Just want to clarify, yesterday he actually wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, the most mature step of devotion in his life. It was almost his story himself in Bhagavad incarnation. But when he wrote, that was at the end of after writing all the Upanishads and everything. And obviously before that he had already written Bhagavad Gita as well, And in Sri Rama class, Shripad Shankaracharya, his also philosophy is based on Bhagavad Gita, because he considers Bhagavad Gita.
Based on Vedanta.
Yeah. But at the same time,
when he writes in his commentary on Vedanta that he's not going to explain the text. He doesn't say, I'm going to explain the text. He says, I'm going to explain the text according to my philosophy. He doesn't say that I'm going to give a purport on the text, but I'm going to explain Vedanta according to my philosophy. Maybe not my philosophy. Good night.
Good night.
You going to drive back now?
Pardon?
Are you going to drive back?
Yes, I'm going to go chant some rounds.
Okay.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks so much.
Start carefully.
Because he wrote, because this is Srila Vyasadeva, I mean, don't they consider, because he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam itself at the end of it, in which he is stating that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they ignored that part and just took what they thought.
But they're true believers, what can one say?
Do they refer to themselves as impersonalists, or did we give them the name?
They refer to themselves as Advaita, followers of Advaita, Advaita philosophy. That's how they refer to themselves. Or jnanis, they practice the path of jnana. Not sure. We call them Mayavadis. I don't think they call themselves Mayavadis. Because it just means that they think that the Supreme Lord is composed of Maya. Yeah, it's a long history, but it's too late at night to go into it too much. But it's but because it's so boring. Being a Mayavadi, they still have to chant Hare Krishna and tell the pastimes of Krishna. Also, they won't get any followers if they don't do this. Before, even when we first got to Vrindavan, there were always some impersonalists. Yeah. They would never chant to kirtan, but now everyone does kirtan. Every sampradaya, even the Soham Ashram, everyone does kirtan in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you don't do kirtan, you won't get anyone coming. Because Krishna's names are so sweet. Just imagine if Ajamil is delivered just by calling his son Krishna's name. Just imagine if one chants with a serving mood, not an impersonalist mood. Just imagine how Krishna reciprocates. Yes.
So there's a good chance there's a bit of an impersonalist in us still, right?
Was that a question? Was that really a question? Or was that a, you'd like to make a statement?
It's really a comment and a question.
It sounds more like a comment. That's why we're here. That's why the presentation of all the verses are there. Yeah. Of all the shastras showing that that he has a form.
I mean, on a day-to-day basis, we deal with impersonalism in all spheres, which is within the society that we move in. It's atheistic in prison.
Materialistic, basically. Whether they're theistic or not theistic. They're all materialistic. Not all of it. But the bread isn't materialistic. It's actually spiritual.
But then can you say that we're dealing with the same inherent conceptions that are there, because we tend to think that you speak of my values as being,
It is a specific philosophy.
Yeah, of course, but I'm saying, but we don't deal with it on a day-to-day basis. We don't deal with that specific philosophy.
But it's infiltrated.
Yeah, that's the society.
That's what I'm, but not philosophically, no. But the conclusion. The whole New Age movement is all like this.
They also think that this world is also an illusion.
But the ordinary or materialists don't think that, but the Buddhism is so much.
I basically think matter is supreme.
That's what materialist means. That's what it means. It means that matter is what you can see is reality.
Mm.
They believe in pratyaksha and anuman, based on inference and direct experience. Inference based on direct experience. And that's the definition, Feuerbach's definition of what a materialist is. I believe what I can see.
Mm. You can't see the wind. You can feel the wind.
You can argue with them. It's okay.
You can see the influence of the wind.
But not on the mind.
What did you want to? But I'll quickly answer. I'll try to quickly answer the question. Too late.
So in Bhagavad Gita, the two kind of philosophies or yoga that Krishna mentioned, the Sankhya and the Buddhi yoga.
And no.
Sankhya.
And.
Sankhya and Buddhi. So Sankhya is it the Vedanta philosophy?
Sankhya is Jnana yoga.
Yeah.
Sankhya means count, to count. So it's counting the material elements and trying to separate oneself from matter. They enumerate the material elements and try to see how they are different from the material elements, and that's basically what Jnana has, Jnana yoga. I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not this, I'm not that. Difference between soul and matter. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.